For September the 19th, 2014, we talk about the Mojang acquisition, Hearthstone, and we ask what's up with Twitch. Welcome to the 76th level. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you so much, you guys, for joining us. I'm speaking to the hosts here right now in this instance. Getting nervous. Okay.
We don't thank the rest.
Keep talking. Don't have silence.
Yep. Nope. Got to keep it going, or else terrible things will happen, or else you get sick. If you ever stop talking. Okay. Yeah.
This is how I imagine you in an interview, Cole.
I gotta relax. I gotta just take it slow. Take a sip off this beer. Sorry. Yep.
Definitely how I imagine you in an interview, drinking.
Well, that's my problem. I'm unemployable now. Just from a combination of several factors. I'm like, is it okay if I light this up in here? Okay, cool. Sir, that's crack rock. What are you doing? Oh man. Usually we have something to kind of bullshit around here at the intro, but I really can't think of anything. So why don't I ask you guys, has anybody done anything especially interesting this week?
I did something especially dumb just about an hour ago.
Yes.
Yeah. So this guy decided he was going to have a margarita with dinner because it was Mexican night.
This guy
had a big old margarita. And then this guy realized it was just margarita mix and did not put any tequila in it. So then this guy faced the dilemma of, do I make myself another margarita and write that wrong, or do I just let it go?
Or
just drink a bottle of tequila.
balance out the humors.
Make the margarita in your stomach.
This is why I keep you guys around.
Keep me honest.
It's this kind of imagine solutioneering that that we provide you. Okay, we write things. Dennis, who knows how you unbalanced your humors just now? I urge you.
If it's not you guys, then I don't know who.
Yeah. No. I mean, even if you have like shitty light beer, just down some and make a limerita in your stomach. For God's sake, you can't have that shitty lime lemonade just sloshing around inside your gully works.
It was not good. So I chose to pass on making another margarita because the meal was over, and now I'm on to a Moreline OTR.
Okay.
And well, I figure that will forgive kind of the sins of earlier.
Yeah, that doesn't sound vile at all. Oh boy, this weekend is Oktoberfest.
Oh yes. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
And homecoming. Oh. So it's basically all party weekend for me.
Yeah, yeah. No, the Cole is gonna speed dial a cab. Cincinnati. Okay, so to the listeners out there who are hearing this, thinking like, okay, Cincinnati, what is that? Is that in Alabama? I don't care. Ohio, flyover state. Blah. Cincinnati's Oktoberfest is the second largest Oktoberfest in the world, second only to Munich.
That's right. Other places in Germany do not have Oktoberfests as large as ours.
Yes. And it basically takes over all of downtown. There's delicious food. Where there's a lot of German heritage down here. A lot of local breweries that have popped up. There are some international German breweries that come down. And you just go and you get drunk on a street.
Mm-hmm.
It is the only time that my desire for alcohol overrides my crippling fear of crowds.
See, I feel like my desire for alcohol helps with my crippling fear of crowds.
Well, I mean, there's a certain correction effect that happens. You know, we take that into account. We call that anxiety drift.
Well, and everyone is just so jolly that it's less of a crowd and more of a, I'm looking for the right word. Like, what's if a crowd is normal and a mob is bad, what's on the other side?
Let's just call them NPCs.
Yeah. Yeah, and
alcohol, because that's all they are, right? Annoying people and NPCs.
Yeah. I don't know what a positive crowd is. All I can think of is an Amish barn raising party where everybody's working together for towards a common goal.
Oh, a community.
Yeah,
a community.
There we go.
What humanity is supposed to have.
Yeah, it is the natural state of communitas, or in German word the German word, yes. in German, I believe that the word is Gemütlichkeit, which is the fellowship that you feel when you are drinking with good friends.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Sure. Seriously though, if anyone knows, like, you know, so what a good form of a mob is. Task force? This is going to bother me now. Someone, yeah. Someone,
a posse,
someone,
yeah.
A conglomerate?
No. Huh. Hey, we got to stop thinking about it, and then it will come to us.
Well, no. I mean, just like what we're stumbling upon here is nothing good can happen when a bunch of people get together, and so we're actually like hypothesizing about this weird utopian state that doesn't exist outside of, you know, Cincinnati on 4th Street between the days of, you know. September 19th and 21st.
What about a jamboree?
Oh, yeah. That...
Oh, shit.
I like that. I like
yeah,
that.
Hootenanny.
A party, I guess. A party doesn't necessarily mean a crowd.
Huh. I don't know. I'm a one-man party. So.
A jamber me.
Oh, we're not going to top that. We might as well stop right now.
Wait a minute, is that the new rule? Once we find a title, we have to stop everything?
We have to turn the humor off after that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well,
guys, we gotta be objective from here on out.
NPR voices here.
Wait,
on
we have
out,
we, yeah. We haven't been objective so far. Well, in this week's episode, we're going to discuss the acquisition of Mojang by Microsoft and the implication that this has on the independent development community. Then we're going to talk about Twitch streaming and such. And then I imagine that one or two of us has played a game. I can't say. But we'll discover that as we go along. This has been The Level. This will be The Level. So there are things that happen in the world. And my question is, does anybody have a story that they want to volunteer for the brief?
I've got one.
Okay.
This is close to home. So hopefully everyone remembers Sherida Halito. Who came on our show. She's the developer, the sole developer, actually, behind the game Beyond Eyes. And we got to talk to her, and it was fantastic. Really enjoyed that. Well, she announced today, being Tuesday, I believe, that her game is being picked up by Team 17 to be released on PC, Mac, Linux, and all consoles, basically.
Oh.
Which is absolutely fantastic news. So for anyone who hasn't heard the episode, what's wrong with you? Go listen to it.
Yeah, it's great.
Basically, she's been developing this game that kind of plays with the concept of what is the way to visualize what a world looks like to someone without sight. And kind of it sounds very counterintuitive, but the second you hop into the game world, you understand it. It's absolutely beautiful.
Yeah. She was kind enough to provide us with alpha code of that, and it was a very good experience, and she had some great things to say about its development.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So check that out. But anyway, so this is great for her, because obviously it means that she's going from, you know, trying to get this funded on Indiegogo or Steam Greenlight to actually having some muscle behind it. So Team 17 did, I believe, the Worms franchise. That's
yes.
Kind of what they're most known for. But they started an indie program, and she's one of the first on the bus. So that's amazing for her, and it means more people will get to play this fantastic game.
Hey. And what was it? She was saying, like, oh, she, you know, I have, you know, 4 full-time jobs trying to deal with this. And well, now she has one less, and she can devote that time either to, you know, enjoying her life or getting the thing done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So congratulations, Sherida.
Yeah, that is fantastic. Yeah. So I'm very excited. Did they mention any other games that were picked up in that deal, or is this just hot off the presses?
I found it via a Facebook post, and I think I clicked around a little bit earlier in the day and saw a list of games. I've since navigated away from it, so I don't have them off the top of my head, but I know there are others. That's a fantastic thing. It's good news.
Yeah. Cool. I'm going to jump over, since we're talking about independent development. Joked about it in the run-up, but this is the biggest news story of this week. Microsoft has bought Mojang, the developer of Minecraft, for $2.5 billion and probably about 2.5 years late.
Damn straight.
Yeah, yeah. So Minecraft, incredibly popular. You do not need me to tell you what Minecraft is. What I think is the interesting angle on this story is Notch's perspective on this.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of his revelation, or, you know, his candid remarks, basically saying that this is less about the money, which is nice. The money is always going to be nice. Nobody can ever say that it's not. It's less about the money and it's more about his sanity. And those are his exact words, basically talking about being unprepared for kind of a life in the limelight as an independent developer and kind of all the negative connotations that has brought. This is not directly related to the recent unpleasantness, as I have taken to calling it, but it definitely is, resonant along those themes. Just the idea that the joy of making something and then the, let's say, harrowing ordeal of trying to manage the people who want to consume it are two entirely different things. And what Notch has said basically is if he will continue to work on other stuff because he sees himself as, you know, just a developer and a coder, not a real game developer, he says, but just as somebody who likes to make things. But if he stumbles upon anything that starts getting traction, he's probably going to pull it immediately.
Yeah. I almost wonder if this is a bit naive on his part. Like, it sounds like he's dissatisfied with the extent, he even talked about it, kind of becoming an icon, or, you know, he stands for something, he's got an image, and he doesn't like that. And it seems like he thinks that just by kind of selling this off, he'll be able to fade into the shadows. And I sincerely doubt that is going to be reality.
He has a quote about this. I'm going to be paraphrasing because I don't have the article directly in front of me, but it's something along the lines of he recognizes that he will still be a public figure to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. And people will still be writing things and talking about him and his stuff. But now, you know, with his exit from Mojang into billionairedom, he will have no obligation to pay attention to it. Which I think addresses that to a certain extent.
Cool. I feel like they're saying, like, if people like anything I make, I'm going to get rid of it. That's a little odd.
Well, I think it's pretty sad, actually, because in an ideal world where somebody could make something and, you know, not get shit about it, like any, you know, if he could just be on Twitter or do something that, you know, saying like, oh, I am at a place doing a thing, and not get a million people saying, well, fix the chickens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if people, it's pretty clear that there's a force chasing people out of this industry, right? Like, what are we being denied because he feels the need to hold something back? Like, I don't know if a person has two Minecrafts in him and maybe he has spent all of his good ideas. I can't say that. But I can't say that he doesn't. And, you know, like, it's pretty sad that somebody got chased out who obviously had some kind of wit about him, you know, insofar as appropriating somebody else's idea and making it really, really popular. Like, you know, just it's a little harrowing to think about what we've lost by, you know, somebody being afraid to make something because of the community coming down on him.
I mean, I don't know if I agree with that in Notch's specific case. I mean, obviously it is related to the recent unpleasantness, as you said, that rings true. But in Notch's case, I don't see it as much as him being actively pushed out, as in antagonistically,
mm-hmm.
but that more, you know, the clamoring that comes with any degree of fame and popularity.
Yeah.
Like, this is the same shit that movie stars deal with, that rock stars deal with, that... And to date, you know, gaming has enjoyed a relative lack of its figureheads, but that's becoming more and more common. And I think what we're seeing, and I actually think it's probably a good thing, is that the figureheads are much less likely to pander or get sucked in to the clamoring crowds. So I wouldn't necessarily say that people are chasing Notch out of the industry. I don't think there was a concerted effort the way there was behind some of the
Zoe Quinn or with Jen Frank or
something. Yeah, exactly. But it's more just kind of a, you know, one, he's freaking earned it, right? Like this guy was never going to have to worry about money again well before this deal ever went down. So this is just icing on the cake, and he's earned doing whatever the hell he wants. But I almost take it as a stamp of maturity that he's able to say, hey, like, I want to do my thing now, and I don't, almost as you said before, I don't feel beholden to all these people who want stuff from me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I phrased that poorly when I talked about, being chased out, you know, explicitly or intentionally, and more just kind of the toxic nature of any kind of community that sprung up.
Yeah, this is a community that is not very good at articulating itself yet, or we are getting better.
Yeah, yeah. Or you know, just at taking care of the people who make the things that we ostensibly like. You know?
Yeah.
You know, I guess that is probably the more accurate way to state it. Ben, you've been a little bit quiet. I want to give you a chance to chip in if you would like.
Yeah, I've been looking for another story because that was my story. So,
damn, sorry.
If it's a $2.whatever billion deal, I think it can take up two stories.
Yeah,
slots.
Possibly. It's a pretty big impact on the industry.
Story.
So, on the other side, do you have any feelings on? I mean, I don't know. Maybe this comes from being a computer programmer, but. I mean, Microsoft is kind of the original evil corporation.
I don't know. I really have no idea what they're thinking. There's no possibility. So, what the Minecraft in 2013 made $3.5 million, I believe was the total revenue that Minecraft generated. I don't know if that was just across, you know, the game selling or the fact that every single 12-year-old has a t-shirt with a creeper face on it. Like, you know, I don't quite know what that is. It seems like this is really, really late to me.
Maybe they just knew that a bunch of other companies were being bought up for billions of dollars. So they're like, all right, we need to buy a company for a couple billion dollars.
Yeah.
That does kind of sound like something Microsoft would do.
Yeah.
It wasn't just Notch that left. It was everyone. Like Microsoft, even though the documents say Mojang, Microsoft bought Minecraft. They didn't get any of the talent. Or the top talent, or the kind of the leaders of it.
Yeah, it was him and what's his name, Person? No, that's his real name. I forget. It was like the initial developer that he hired on.
Yeah.
That made an exit. I think there were still like six people left at the company.
Well, isn't that? I guess I'm kind of surprised that I always assumed it was you're buying a name. I mean,
yeah.
I assumed the name was Notch.
Yeah.
But I never assumed this was actually about anything but buying a name.
Yeah. Regardless, like it's not an acquihire, as you know, in the Valley parlance. Am I right? Silicon Valley. Hey, F5. Let's crowd venture a fund. they're going after basically the ability to, you know, harness any money that goes in towards from Minecraft.
So I was thinking about this in terms of a sequel, and the only thing I could come, like, I don't know what you would do with a Minecraft 2 that wouldn't be better served just kind of as a patch to the original Minecraft, like they've been doing for 5 years plus.
Yeah, we already have Minecraft 7. Like, it's a completely different game right now.
Yeah, exactly. And so the only thing I could come up with was Kart Racer.
I'm sure somebody's done that with
Redstone. Guys, Minecraft Gritty Reboot.
I'm pretty certain that, so like, and I don't know, I it's been so long since I paid attention to Minecraft, but you could probably fairly easily that was so many adverbs at once. You could probably in a fairly expedient fashion create like slot car racing in that with minecarts and redstone and stuff.
Sure.
Yeah.
See, I don't know what they're doing. It might be, I mean, honestly, just overall a desperation play. It's Microsoft overall is kind of having tough times.
Well, Microsoft hasn't had a really great record of buying companies and putting them to good use. You know, like the biggest the biggest example would be Rare, right? Like they bought them and it's like, hey, do Cameo and then Kinect Sports forever. This is you now. You used to make Perfect Dark and now you don't.
Yep.
Shut up.
Again, a brilliant thing that someone else said that I retweeted was, you know, I really hope that Microsoft doesn't waste Mojang's talent and just completely ruin them. I mean, it's happened before, but it's rare.
It's pretty good. People are pretty anxious, actually, about what this is going to do. So as somebody who owns Minecraft and plays it on a Mac, you know, a Mac operating system, everybody is worried that Microsoft is going to be pulling basically Minecraft away from all these other platforms that it's really started to thrive on, you know, PlayStation and iPhone and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know if I believe that that's an actual risk. I think that part of Minecraft's appeal is, you know, its universal availability. What I would worry about is either the Windows or the Xbox version being prioritized in development and becoming the lead SKU and becoming the main place where new stuff starts to happen. That I think is the biggest danger that we have from this.
On the other hand, the other argument I've heard is, you know, being able to basically, hey, PlayStation, we own the most popular game on your system.
Oh, yeah. That is a pretty politically savvy move. Huh. I don't know. Ben, did you have another story that you were able to pull up?
There's one about Watch Dogs. They have DLC that came out this week.
Oh, yeah.
Called Bad Blood. And basically all it does is switch out the main characters to one of the supporting characters in the game because the main character has about zero personality. So it's a slight improvement, I guess, but apparently the gameplay is about the same. So,
well, to be fair, the main character is a computer programmer.
Yeah. Touché.
Yeah. Are there new missions or is it literally just a...
So there's 10 new missions. Okay. And as I said, it's with one of the side characters, so you get his associated vehicles / weapons / whatever. So, yeah.
Can the side character do Iden's... Iden. I feel like this is Beyond Two Souls. Can this guy, you know, this new character do Aiden's quests, or is it...
I don't think it subs out the other missions, but this character is also a hacker as... Aiden. And so he is inundated with the exact same abilities. Okay. So
yeah. Huh. That's a little bit of a shame. I mean, for as goofy and misogynistic as the Catwoman DLC for Arkham City was.
Why do you say it's misogynistic?
So the stuff itself wasn't, but people were pretty happy about calling Catwoman a bitch.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
Oh, wait. In the game, or
yeah, in the game, like within the game, the NPCs. And of
was
course,
that
they're
like
supposed
a button?
To be.
Was that mapped to L1?
No. It's just in the game itself. And of course, they're probably playing to character and being. Maybe I'm just being overly sensitive, but I can't hear that word when spoken in reference to a woman and not feel grossed out about it. So,
because that should be reserved for dog woman.
Yeah, for dog women. Yeah,
I mean, that is kind of confusing.
Yeah, but to my original point, she had different abilities and different, you know, traversal skills and things like that, you know, enough that navigating that space was different. But if you are still hacky drivey guy, then that's a little bit of a disappointment.
Yeah, if I played it, I could give concrete answers about it, but I'm probably not going to do that.
Yeah,
so.
I can see that. I can understand that. Huh. And David, how about you?
I've got nothing. I'm sorry.
Attaboy.
Multiplayer.
It is time for the multiplayer where we ask you to interact with us. Dennis, what is the question that you put out to the listeners?
The question I put out, so there's someone here who will not be named, who it's me, discovered Twitch and is really kind of getting into it. And so I just thought I'd put out, you know, do people watch Twitch? And if so, what are kind of the games and channels that you like the most?
Hey, David, what does David say?
David says, only recently, it first started out with just the Kingdom of Loathing live streams, but after my daughter was born and I lost three hands required to play video games, watching Hearthstone streams helped scratch the itch a little bit.
Yeah. Those Kingdom of Loathing streams are pretty good. I don't particularly play Kingdom of Loathing that actively, so it's not that useful for me to keep active on the most recent hip happenings. But I don't know. Zach is pretty fun to watch.
Are these someone playing Kingdom of Loathing? How do you stream?
These are, if they're anything like the first one that I watched, it's actually just like a question and answer kind of thing. And he kind of like walks through like development details and things like that. And they're like, he does them for like a really long time. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Although streaming Kingdom of Loathing would be pretty interesting.
I do have to say,
that's what I was trying to envision. Like, how does that work?
I did always wonder, I don't think anyone's gone back to it now, but you used to be able to do like complete the entire game in one day. And I would kind of like to see a play-by-play of how that worked.
Oh, yeah. I imagine like a text or picture let's play of that would be pretty harrowing, especially with the way the RNG works.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. And for those of you who do not know, it is the random number god.
And it is evil.
Yeah.
Pure evil.
Yeah. So let's see. It's funny that he says he lost the ability because he had a baby daughter. Dennis, didn't you pick up Hearthstone because you had a baby son? Are sons and daughters that different?
No, I think they're pretty much the same early on. Although I heard a great quote that was, when you have a boy, you have to worry about one boy. When you have a girl, you have to worry about all boys. So throw that out there. Glad it's you and not me, David. I need a kind of a mulligan here. A nice trial baby before I get into that real shit.
Yeah. Yeah, you gotta get on that second kid tip and have no fucks left to give.
That's right. That's right.
that's how I became the person I was, youngest for life.
But yeah, I mean, I got into it because it's easy to play with one hand and half your attention is, I think, the line that I've used. Mm-hmm. And that kind of led into me watching the Twitch streams of the Blizzard hosted tournaments, which was really fun. And it was super educational about the game because you see a bunch of cards and strategies that you just wouldn't normally without investing a ton of money in the game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's see here. Dennis, what does Dustin say?
Dustin says, I browse Twitch when my YouTube feed lacks content, but it's just for background noise and to look at while I'm gaming. It's like the news, but instead it's stuff that actually happened. Yes!
Yeah, I read this earlier today when it first got posted, and I'm like, I'm so using that line. Yeah.
I wouldn't have been so much more into watching TV as a kid if there was a gaming channel. I try to catch No Life Crip, and he has a link to it if he's streaming, or I pick a random game that I haven't seen before. That concept is really interesting to me, the idea of this as a background noise kind of deal.
That's the primary use that I've heard for this. I'm entertained by the notion of watching Twitch while you're gaming.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yo, dog.
Man,
when I read this about the gaming channel, I'm just imagining like all those ads for like, it's TLC, the learning channel, except it's just that transposed with like what that would look like for a gaming channel.
Mountain Dew. Why are we doing so many multiplayers that require me to like put a shitload of links in the show notes?
I have not been thinking about that. I also did the multiplayer with the box art, which is not too well suited for a podcast. So.
Well, it turned into a great discussion. What that led to me doing was actually doing the longest links of note we've ever done.
That's awesome.
It was
a good discussion. I listened to that one.
Yeah. If not for the network, at least for this show. So I'm sorry if I missed any. There were just so many. You know what that made me do? It made me have to go back and listen to our own show.
Oh no!
I know,
that
right?
Sounds dreadful.
Ugh, the worst. Who would do that? Let's see here. Sean says, I'll pop onto Twitch if there's an event that I want to see. The Kingdom of Loathing guys do a live dev stream there about monthly, and a few charity marathons have hosted their events there. I've popped onto or tried to pop onto a couple of DuckFeed.tv hosted ones. If it costs the broadcaster nothing and they want to share their gaming experience, then onward. So a second endorsement for the KOL streams. Yeah,
that's a popular one.
Yeah, I should probably like make a page on DuckFeed that is just everybody's individual Twitch names and stuff. If everybody wants to do that, I don't know if Twitch has an embeddable player, but that is with you doing streams, Dennis, I assume, and me occasionally aspiring to do them someday, and Gary does streams as well. It might be good to have that. I'm very reticent to do it, honestly, because I'll throw mine in here, because I listen to podcasts while I play games, and if I'm going to do a stream, I want to be talking. So I need to find that magical mix of games where I feel comfortable talking about this and also can silence the voices in my head long enough by not listening to a podcast. So that, you know, there's really that, and also the fact that I suck at games, and also you know, play games in a very meticulous fashion that would not be very fun to watch. All of that kind of leads into it.
But apparently sucking at games can be good fodder for good times.
Oh.
We'll get to that in the grind, but that is not necessarily a complete detriment.
Yeah. And as far as watching streams, I will do it again, kind of like Sean here, if there's an event that I really want to watch. But honestly, it's just a matter of I watch so little of my entertainment that it's hard to fit that in.
Hmm.
Yeah. Ben, what does Sam say?
Sam says, I'm usually asleep when the streamers I like are on, but I try to catch Slow Beef and the men drinking coffee when they post recordings of their streams on YouTube.
Yeah.
I don't know what they do, but those are the people that he watches.
I think Slow Beef is
awesome screen names.
Yeah, so Slow Beef, I think he's a goon. I think he's a Something Awful goon, and I think he's part of like the Red Super A guys. Okay. Yeah, and
the
I don't.
What?
Red Super A. It's they're like a, it's him and a guy named Diabetes. They do like a comedy podcast and YouTube series called Red Super A.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I believe that's how you pronounce it. David.
So, what is the overlap between like or the role in the video gaming universe between like Twitch and Let's Plays?
They're pretty. There's a pretty hefty overlap there, I would say.
Yeah.
Twitch is ephemeral, I would say.
Even more so now.
Well, it's not. Yeah, not necessarily recorded. Whereas the Let's Plays, I think, are posted to YouTube
for like archival purposes. Like a Let's Play to me feels more archival and more like groomed, I guess. More. I hate this
tutorials.
Word, but curated. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Like there's a, you know, there's a certain amount of like knowledge and weight. Like you know, streams. There are definitely a lot of streamers, especially in the Dark Souls community, who are extremely competent with the game and demonstrate a level of expertise. But I see a Let's Play as a, you know, especially one that's not a blind Let's Play, as a more concerted effort to put together a tighter product. Whereas a stream more and more now is just kind of a, well, I'm going to open this window into my game playing world.
Yeah.
Dave, I mean, David, do you have, or so sorry, Ben, do you have any experience watching streams?
Yeah, I don't have any people that I particularly follow, but I've watched streams on like GTA. I watched Twitch Plays Pokemon when that was a thing. And, sometimes I'll go back and watch some if it's like a game that I haven't seen in a while. So like I watched one on Heavy Rain a while back, just to revisit that game. But more importantly, like see what somebody else's choices were in the game, which was kind of interesting.
Yeah. It's kind of funny because most people use Twitch to watch Evo, and you just went to Evo in person.
Yeah, I just drove there. It's like 10 minutes.
It's like no big deal.
Oh, is that through Twitch?
That's broadcast on Twitch now, I believe.
Okay, then that's man. I've been using Twitch for a while then.
Oh yeah. I don't know if Twitch itself, like them using Twitch itself, is a recent development, but I know that it is an event because I get their emails and such.
Yeah, I think that answers the question to whether or not it's embeddable, because I'm pretty sure I've watched Evo, but not necessarily on Twitch.tv.
Hmm. Yeah. Let's see here. David, what does Chad say?
Chad says, I've played Twitch more than once on the Duckfeed network.
Plugged Twitch.
Plugged. Fair enough.
Do it right. Chad,
No, I just it changes the meaning of the sentence. I don't mean to be a dick, I just am.
Strangely enough, words change the meaning of sentence. I know, I was shocked too. Chad says, I've plugged Twitch more than once on the Duckfeed network. I'm pretty sure Cole hated on it. He has to keep up that Hayden persona, though, so I understand. I have gotten a serious falling out with college and professional sports as I've gotten older, except for F1. And Twitch has completely replaced sports time on my TV or other motion picture device. At first, I only watched Dark Souls speedrunners. But word spreads quickly on Twitch, so I discovered many other streamers and even stream myself. I really enjoy the social aspect of Twitch. The best streamers constantly interact with chat, especially Cerno and Lobos. With the death of the demo, I've used Twitch more recently to learn about other games before taking the plunge, like Destiny. I apologize for this giant list, but maybe some... Yeah,
and he presents a long list. I'll do my best to recreate this in the show notes. But if you're looking for this, it's on Facebook as well. Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm trying to fight against being a hater. Like just I just in the face of overwhelming negativity, I want to try and be a little bit more positive. It is a journey. I don't know if I've ever ever directly hated on Twitch. Maybe I've called it goofy, which is not hating per se, or talked about how it doesn't necessarily fit into my life, but, I don't know.
Spit out that haterade, Cole.
Yeah. I'm trying real hard, guys.
Yeah, I know the difficulty I have is like I'm kind of with I tend to be Mr. ADHD, so I tend to only do one thing at a time because I can only really focus on one thing at a time. So I unfortunately can't listen to podcasts or do Twitch or something like that while I'm doing other things. Although I do kind of like the idea of it as background noise, because that's definitely something I do with the news, as was kind of cited earlier.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I've never actually streamed anything. I feel like no one wants to watch me spend like hours staring at like the weapon screens in Borderlands, trying to decide which gun to use.
Yeah, I feel like we've had this discussion before about games that are good to do as a second sort of thing. But I think, it's super game dependent. Like, I could do it with Fallout New Vegas. I could have something else on, but I would not be able to do it with like Last of Us. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like Fallout. Except that there's so much just like in between time. That would be a fun game to watch someone. That'd be a game I'd love to see what other people get up to in.
Yeah. I think there's an angle to this where a good stream, especially if the person is doing commentary, is going to be like an especially good extemporaneous podcast.
Sure.
You know, somebody who is charismatic and well-spoken and is entertaining to listen to will be that way. Regardless of if it's recorded or being sent out live. So there is that element to it.
Said, I don't do it.
Yeah. But like, you know, Lobos comes up here every once in a while, and he's a guy who's been on Bonfireside Chat, and he is an absolute prince of a man. And I've tuned into some of his streams when he does them just because, you know, that is, know, he's fun to listen to. Same thing, again, like I've said with the Kingdom of Loathing thing, those guys are fun to listen to. So I will listen to them even if I don't care about the actual subject, you know, because sometimes you need voices in your house.
Sure.
to block drown out the ones in your
the
head.
Other voices yes. that, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Just so loud when it's quiet. That's a title callback, guys.
That was, yeah. Yeah. I followed you.
Yeah. Hey, Dennis, what's Michael say? Mikhail, sorry.
He's got a big paragraph. So when I watch Twitch, no, I watch Twitch somewhat occasionally since I don't do the kind of work that allows me to productively keep a stream going in the background if I'm trying to get stuff done. If streamers archive stuff to YouTube, that's where I'm most likely to see it. However, I do get on Twitch if someone is streaming pre-release gameplay of something I'm somewhat interested in, or to keep something in the background if I'm not listening to music when I'm playing a game that has natural pauses, such as Civ 5 or Hearthstone. Again, that kind of background noise, which is I'd never thought of that before. I will also tune in for speed and challenge runs of Souls games, Souls PvP, events like GDQ, and the occasional StarCraft tournament. The social experience of a smaller chat can be cool, too. Larger chats I generally hide, since they make me feel like I'm in an overcrowded junior high cafeteria with a bunch of hyperactive, shit-flinging chimpanzees.
Well spoken.
As chat
yes, indeed. favorites are Lobos Jr., just mentioned him. Day 9, a StarCraft guy whose adventures in other games are funny to watch, e.g. Dark Souls 2. Miscellaneous game journalists like the Steam Friends channel, which includes Phil Collar.
Yeah, also another Bonfireside Chat alumni. So yeah. This is weird.
We will reach the singularity where literally everyone has been on Bonfireside Chat.
I guess. I don't know. Continue. Oh, that's it. Yeah, no, Phil Collar is a nice guy.
No, that's it.
Yeah. So Dennis, are you just watching Hearthstone streams or are you branching out?
So far, just Hearthstone. But there is a freaking lot. Like, that is a popular game. And I just don't know if Twitch is big enough that everything is that popular. But it seems like there is always a ton of people streaming it. And I don't know if that's just, you know, there's something about it that lends itself to that fact or what, but that's where I've stayed mostly. Again, the Evo stuff I've watched as well. So fighting games are, I think, fun as well, just because it's something that I know I will never be as good at as the people I'm going to watch.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of, it's cool to watch someone practice their art.
Yeah. Well, that lends to, you know, game as sport, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think the chat, again, waiting for the grind, because there's so much good stuff from the past couple of days since I've discovered Twitch. But the social experience of a smaller chat is absolutely a good point.
Yeah.
It lent to a lot of fun. I'll talk about it more. But I've also experienced the other side of it where just too many people leads to someone at any given point is just shouting tits or something racist or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
How do you think this relates back to, well, I guess I feel like this is interesting in relation to our news story, what, week before last, that, was it PewDiePie or whatever, killed his comment section of his YouTube account?
Yeah.
So maybe there is hope for the internet.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. Like a funny experience that I had with chat back when I was doing Soul streams, in which I really ought to start doing again. I would
cool
just what?
Another title callback.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Well, what title is that?
Cola, dude.
Colo.
Colo. So, I thought you said polo.
Think
okay.
about it.
Yeah. Thank you. Wait a second. Okay. I had to find it. Where's my bell? General puzzles. A good experience I had was just strangers who had no way of knowing. I would just ask out loud. Hey, somebody would, you know, like respond, you know, answer one of my questions. And I would say, hey, are you a listener to the show? Like, no, I'm just kind of surfing around. Just thought I'd pop in and see what's going on, which is a behavioral, it baffles me. Because I would never do that, but it is delightful that people are using that as a way to like discover, discover, you know, broadcasters and creators and stuff. Not the least of which, because that broadcaster and creator was me. Go ahead.
The thing is, like, you know, if a rando joins and they're one of three people in the room, leads to really interesting discussion. Yeah. If a rando joins and is one of 300 people in the room, it leads to screaming and, quote, shit flinging.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, my strategy for that is just to never be popular. Get a good start.
The notch approach, apparently.
Yeah. So, Dennis, here's my question for you, and this might be getting a little bit into grind territory. Are you streaming this from your iPhone? Are you streaming this from how are you getting Hearthstone onto other people's screens?
Yeah. So I'm actually amazed that there are so many people streaming Twitch, because it is an incredibly complicated setup process. You have to go, and there's like six different streaming clients that you can choose from. I went with the free one, but OBS. Then you got to get that set up and make sure OBS. You got to make sure all the settings are correct. Choose how you want to set up your stream. I watched a lot of tutorials. You need to download a separate sound client if you want to have a microphone, which I did.
Hey, Soundflower bed.
Yeah, exactly.
High five, buddy. Yeah.
Oh, do you use it?
Yeah.
Oh, well, there you go. That's a whole process, and just, I couldn't believe that I got everything to work on the first try. But anyway, so I'm doing it on my Mac, and just basically I open up OBS, hit start the stream and launch into the game. And then I'll keep my iPhone by me and actually go into the comments on my iPhone so I can interact with people, on one screen while playing on the other. Although I've seen tutorials on how to kind of integrate the two screens. And I'm thinking about doing that just from the perspective of, I don't want to use up a ton of data on my phone if I'm not on Wi-Fi with it.
Yeah. Makes sense.
And having two devices streaming Twitch is a little strenuous if you want to do it all over Wi-Fi.
I think that if you're just in the Twitch client, you can, just have the chat room open. That's what I do. I plop open my iPad in front of me and have that there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what I'm doing with my iPhone. Yep. But you can have just the chat window, not the stream.
Yep.
Oh, cool. All right, I will do that.
Yeah.
I've learned a lot the past couple of days.
it is a complicated topic, and I wish it was easier. And you know, that is one of the cooler things about the newer consoles, is just having a share button that will plop you right into Twitch. You know, making it easier.
Yeah, it's got to be near. Oh, I'm so sorry. It's got to be near impossible to do on PS3, right? Like you need a separate capture device and everything.
Yeah. I've got when I did Demon's Soul streams, I have like an Elgato Game Capture HD or whatever. They're not like hyper expensive. They're like $180, which I think reveals my capacity for hyper expensive or not. And I immediately feel really gross about that. But like it's not prohibitive.
That's a Wii U.
It is. Yeah.
Sure.
It's a PS Vita, something like that.
Hmm?
Yeah. Let me see here. Dennis, you just read Mikhail, so I'm going to do Geolaw. Wait, what? Yeah, Geolaw. There we go. I like Twitch. Who's been Twitching? I've been watching Gary's streams mostly. My favorite part is being in the chat, because Gary's really good about conversing while playing, and people in chat will riff on what he says and vice versa. Also, Franker Z, the emoji, is great. I don't know what that last sentence means, Jeffrey. I am so sorry. I haven't watched enough of Gary's streams to know Franker Z. If that is indeed an emoji that could be dropped into Twitch chat. But Gary's streams are very good.
He is, and it might just be because he's so good at Isaac. But when I've watched him do Isaac streams, it sounds like he's not even playing. Like, I tried to use a mic while playing Hearthstone, which has a lot of natural pauses. You don't have to be super engaged, and I couldn't put two words together. Whereas he's doing Binding of Isaac, Final Boss, killing it, not losing any health,
and watching
and
chat,
having some deep conversation on the side. Yeah, exactly, and watching chat. So that is like a special level of Twitch that I hope to attain someday.
Yeah,
my theory is that playing by Binding of Isaac like uses up enough of the surface level thought that Gary just attains enlightenment during the course of the game.
Yeah. you know, speaking as a an Isaac novice, really, that is kind of a game you get into a little bit of a trance with, and I can totally see like what you would imagine being the hectic, like, okay, this requires a lot of my attention, defaulting to either muscle memory or just kind of, you know, conscious risk, you know, mitigation or unconscious risk mitigation. And really the big decisions that you have to make are, you know, like broadly strategic. So I can kind of see where the conversation comes from, not to diminish from Gary's natural ability to, you know, hold, like, I couldn't do it as well as he does, just because I am both not very good at talking and also not great at Isaac, but to answer your question, Gio, I like how we just call him Gio now. He's been twitching. Dennis been twitching.
Yes.
He's a twitchy fellow.
Yeah. Let's see here on my card. Who's next? Ben, what does Robert say?
Robert says, I don't watch Twitch often, but if I see a duck feed post, I'll watch it for a bit. I also try and catch the monthly Kingdom of Loathing stream coming up again. And awesome games done quick when they are streaming. The only time I've streamed is when me and my friends do the Extra Life gaming marathon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hey, good on you.
Yeah. So I'm gonna have to put those Kingdom of Loathing streams in the show notes now, because they've come up 4 times.
Yeah. Apparently this is a thing.
Yeah.
I feel like I've kind of
it's almost
something.
It's almost like there's crossover in the audiences. It's almost like they've mentioned us a couple of times. Yeah. Let's see here. David, why don't you round us out with Christopher?
Sure. Christopher Slee says, I won't give a list because it's random and boring, but I will say that I got into it recently when I discovered that Awesome Games Done Quick, was a thing from an episode of Retronauts relatively recently. Prior to that, I'd just been following some Let's Plays of the few episodes that I can stand on YouTube. But through that Awesome Games Done Quick, I found some channels of people that were part of that whole thing that I dig.
Yeah. He doesn't mention it. He mentions Retronauts, but the Retronauts streams are also very good. They go back and play some old games, and they are cool guys.
You know, it seems like sort of doing the kind of the Wikipedia effect, where you just get into like a couple of streams and then follow the rabbit trail to find more and more streams you like. It seems like a couple of people have either mentioned that or kind of alluded to it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a, you know, it's kind of like podcasts. There's a relatively incestuous community, you know, like you will tend to follow, you know, audiences follow from one channel to another. Right.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In a way that makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. Has anybody not had a chance to express their opinion on streaming? Sorry, I'm so self-conscious about skipping over somebody since last week.
Wait, who got skipped?
I skipped Ben last week.
It's Jala's fault. She threw you off.
Yeah, I did a very bad job of editing your response back in too, Ben. I'm so sorry.
It's okay. I don't go back and listen to the podcast either, so that's okay.
Okay, cool. As long as none of us are listening to this. Cool. So thank you, everybody.
Well, now I'm going to go listen to it. Ah, shit.
Spite.
Yeah. Thank you, everybody, for responding to this. If you would like to get in on the conversation, happens on our Facebook group on Tuesday afternoons. It is facebook.com/TheLevel Podcast. Dennis is kind enough to put those up. And we welcome your responses.
The grind.
It is now time for The Grind, where we talk about the games that we have been playing this week. Does anybody want to volunteer to go first?
I can.
Ben, go.
Yes. Did it. So last week I had finished Watch Dogs, so this week I kind of had a void. But last week I also purchased the Humble Indie Bundle. Mm. And so I've got to find out which of those games ran on my computer and which did not. So I played the first few minutes of Gone Home and found out that it was one of the games that could not run on my computer. But I was able to make it inside of the house, at least. So I got that far.
So you've gone home.
I went home. I made it to and inside of the home.
Well, that's all there is to that game. And yeah, it ends when you go home.
Right after you open the front door. Yeah, I know.
Is that before or after the brainwashing from feminists? I can't remember.
Yeah. Oh, man. It's where they try and convince you that it's a game. High five, am I right?
Sidestepping that conversation.
Idle thumbs cabal.
But one of the games that can run on my computer was Papers, Please. So I got to kind of dig into that a little bit. And yeah, it was kind of fun. I haven't played Cart Life, but I feel like it's kind of like Cart Life. Yeah. Am I right in that assessment?
They're in a similar vein.
Okay. Because it was, you know, pretty sad.
Pretty oppressive, right?
Yeah. Well, this is like a year old, and I think we've already talked about this on the podcast, but just a brief review. Papers, Please, you play a checkpoint security guard on what is essentially USSR, but they have made up names for the countries, and you're checking people's papers as they try and enter the country, and if there are any errors, you deny them entrance to the country. If everything looks good, you accept them. The thing that makes it more sort of high stakes is the money that you make from this job you're using to take care of your family plus a couple other extended family members. So if you don't make enough money, they start getting cold and hungry and sick, and things get kind of grim. So that makes you have to work faster than you would want to work, but working faster means that you're more prone to make an error, and that if you make errors, you get docked money. So it becomes quickly a stressful situation. On top of that, if you make mistakes, you let perhaps ill-willed people into the country, depending upon who it is. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, they give you pretty sympathetic characters that they make you deny service into the country. So,
wait, if you're working for a communist dystopia, aka a communist country, wouldn't denying someone access be a good thing to do?
Well, they may be fleeing from a similarly fucked country. When you look at the geopolitical situation around Arstotzka, you know, like it's basically from one block to another, you know?
So it's the lesser of all impoverished nations, yeah. I guess.
And mostly they're going to see their kids or work or something like that. Then you know, that's what he means when he says that it's, you know, they're sympathetic. They will provide you with a sob story, and you know, it's forcing you to optimize around you know, your human desire to, you know, like help somebody out, hopefully.
Yeah, so there was one story I wanted to share, but I don't know how spoilery it is. It occurs about 20 minutes into the game.
Yeah, go ahead.
But basically, one of the people you let in, basically the rules for how you let somebody in gets more complicated as time goes on, so which makes it harder to check a single person's form, so it makes it harder to get money. But one of the people you let in, he has a passport, and then they have like daily passes that they need to provide with their passports. So you have to check both documents now. But anyway, you let one person in. All of his stuff looks good. You approve him. There's no problems. And on his way out, he says, "Oh, yeah, my wife's right behind me. Make sure you be nice to her and stuff." And so he leaves, and then his wife comes. She has a passport. Everything looks good, but she doesn't have the daily pass that's required to enter the country. So it's obvious that you cannot let her in. You know, like there's no way that you can do that. So that's the choice, you know. So I decided to not let her in and be a heartless person, you know. And her response is, "You've doomed me, you know, like you've ruined my life, you know." And the next person, same situation, where she has an okay passport but no daily pass. And so I think they purposely set it up so that to ask the player the question, you know, okay, if you let this person in who's somebody's wife, you know, who vouches for her, mm-hmm. are you also going to let in the next person who is in the exact same situation, but you just don't have another voucher for her, you know? So it's like how much are you willing to bend this rule, you know, if you're willing to do that?
And which meter does this feel up?
What do you mean?
Which morality meter? Like, does it tilt you towards evil or good?
There's not a morality meter in it.
I'm making a very subtle jab at morality because that is an ethical question, right? Are you just making decisions based on what's in front of you? Because obviously everybody that you've denied, you have fucked over in a similar way. It's just more sad because there's somebody on the other side of it, like right now.
Yeah. In a more comedic tone, there are some recurring characters of like, there's an old guy who keeps trying to get into the country. So he gets progressively better at trying to forge documents. So that's kind of funny, but
what's the way, like he makes his own passport in crayon and in the country name he writes like Snakeistan or something like that.
Yeah. So that's like the only kind of humorous part of the game.
Yeah. I think the wonderful thing about that for me the first time I played it was it's so obviously fake, but you can't turn him away until you find the like option to point out what's fake.
Yeah.
So that one actually took me a lot of the time the first time he showed up, because it's like, okay, I know this is fake. Where is the folder file on the part of the document that I need to point out to show him he has to go away, even though I know 100% this is fake?
Well, okay, this document in crayon, it looks kind of suspicious, but there's no rule that says a dog can't play basketball.
Yeah.
It's pretty much exactly.
Yeah, no, it's exactly right. And it was kind of one of the more sublime kind of moments of, making a statement on bureaucracy for me playing that game. So that was a very, not only is it pretty funny, but it's just, it's very, very well done.
Yeah.
From a thematic standpoint.
And those kind of staged, bespoke, for lack of a better word, moments, choices like that, they determine how the story branches. Mm-hmm. So it is a game that's worth going through multiple times, which is weird to say about a tedium simulator.
Yep.
So could you simply the first time be like, Snakeistan's awesome, I'm letting him in?
You can, but you'll get docked money for doing that.
Yeah. I've never done it just on principle, even though I know that would get him out of my hair. But who knows? He may leave and try and come back in. So that might not actually solve the problem.
Snakeistan is awesome. Feeding your son is more awesome.
Yeah. Or giving him medicine. Or heating your apartment.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was one pet peeve I had. So I wasn't able to heat my apartment one night. Everyone was cold. But then I was able to heat it the next 2 days, but they were still cold.
Hmm.
I don't know what that was about.
I think that they're going to be cold regardless. What happens is it shifts internally within that distinction. Eventually, they get sick.
Yeah.
So if you don't pay for heat now, you're going to have to pay for medicine later, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is there an end game? Can they like end up going Oregon Trail style and eventually like everyone dies and it's game over? Yep. Or is it?
Okay. That's like the good ending of the game, though. It's like, oh, you died. It's great now.
Yeah, the sweet release of death. That's what the Steam trophy is called.
Yeah.
Huh. Neat. Did anything else in that bundle work for you?
Those are the only two that I've tried so far.
Okay.
So I might continue onward to something else. I know you said one of the games was easy to run.
Gunpoint.
Yeah.
I think that Gunpoint is going to be a nice counterpoint to Watch Dogs for you.
Okay.
Yeah.
That'll be on the horizon.
What?
Yeah.
No, just it very much. I never thought of it that way.
Yeah.
Guys, we should start like a list of game pairings. You have good wine pairings. You need good game pairings.
Well, it can't be a game and another game. It's not like, ooh, this Cabernet goes well with a Sauvignon Blanc. It's like it needs to be something else.
The way I drink it does.
The metaphor only works to a point, I think the idea is solid.
Yeah, like, that's like a Netflix algorithm. If you like blank, you would probably like blank.
Or no, I mean, just maybe I'm thinking of it.
So play The Last of Us with mushroom soup.
That'd be the worst. That'd be the last thing you want to do.
But it's, yeah, less like if you liked X, you'll like Y, and more like, hey, these two complement each other in an interesting way.
Oh, yeah. They're like, they set each other off.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. Huh. Is that all, Ben?
I also played a game of Civ, but that's
a matter of course.
6 feet under. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
So that's all I got.
Yeah. David, it sounded like you were ready to leap in with your thing as well at the beginning.
Sure. I've been continuing on Resident Evil 6. I've started Ada's campaign.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty funny how like jankily set up it is in terms of co-op. I don't know. Have any of you guys co-opted this? Or Cole, you're the only one that's played this, I guess, right?
I mean, like, I'm aware of it. I've never co-opted, but like, it's just a random umbrella dude who pops in. Seems like Walter or some shit, right?
No, his name is Agent.
Yeah.
like I think he might use the same model as the like generic helicopter pilot.
So you know he's got to die.
Well, yeah, and the thing is, like, when we say it's just a generic guy, we mean, like, he can't interact with any, like, any of the puzzle things or anything like that. And, you know, he can't open any doors that what would normally be, like, a door to go to the next area for a checkpoint. He can't open any of those. Whenever you zipline up to a place or something like that, he simply teleports to be next to you. Like, it's very much like he is not programmed into the game. They just straight up programmed it as, and then there's another dude next to you.
I don't actually believe, so I could be wrong. I think that Ada's campaign was meant to be single player only. But when they turned it from unlockable to just available at the start, they made it co-op.
To further
integrate it into the game. I can't speak to that, and because the way the internet works, nobody can find out because that game was only like that for 2 months.
Sure. Well, I mean, straight up, like, it definitely is made to be single player only, just with co-op. If that makes sense, but. Yeah, so far, not a lot to say for it. I think it's a little bit funny. The world's largest nuclear sub that you're running around.
Yeah.
Just the fact that you're like falling through like, you know, hundreds of yards of like elevator shaft on like a, you know, thing where people have to share bunk beds. It's like none of it makes sense.
Yeah.
So it's a Resident Evil game.
Yeah. Well,
it's a modern Resident Evil game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is the voice acting for Ada bad, do you think?
I don't remember it being worse than Leon's.
Well,
I mean, just like, you know, I don't remember it sticking out above everybody else's. I think that all of it is incredibly campy, you know, so it's not. It's hard to fault her as being like especially bad.
I guess she's the only one, just like the way, like her intonation, the way like it's done is the only one that to me sounds like someone reading lines.
Mm-hmm.
However, I can't tell if that's because it's poor voice acting or because basically this is a character whose personality is kind of shallow.
Yeah.
Well, and if that's actually the point.
Even bad writing, exquisitely read, is going to sound like bad writing. Is going to sound like, oh, somebody would only ever read this off of a script.
Right.
You know, like it's just you can't get around that.
Sure.
Yeah.
So.
So her campaign is pretty funny to me just because it's very obviously afterthought glue in order to kind of like fill in the gaps around every other part of the story, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there there is the little bit of like plot twist with her involvement in everyone else's story. That, you know, obviously that's a thing, and this does resolve that.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. It's kind of entertaining. I think she's by far the least interesting of the characters, partially just because she's incredibly unlikable.
Yeah.
But
so are you done with Resident Evil 6 now?
I think I've got like three more chapters in her. So.
We can never be done with Resident Evil 6.
Yeah, pretty much.
God. It needs to just be a standing feature on every single episode of the level.
Well, I mean, I need to go back and look. It's fortunate that we keep all of this data, but I think I talked about it for like 7 weeks in a row because it took me that long to beat.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. That does kind of tend to be its thing.
Well, and then we're close to that, I think, for David and Jala's playthrough. So I think I should take it up next. I'll carry the torch for everyone for about, you know, 3 months. And then Ben,
yeah. you know what's weird? I think that game was like maybe the originator of that joke, maybe that or Mass Effect, just the way that game completion tends to pass around.
Oh yeah, that's probably right.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. Do you find yourself driven to complete it, or is it like at this point the social pressure of we co-opt all of this, so we need to finish it? Damn it! Or like. If you were left to your own devices, would you see this through to the end, David?
I probably would. You know, overall, like I actually enjoy the game a lot. And even though this is probably by far my least favorite of the chapters or whatever of the acts, you know, it's still generally speaking enjoyable enough. It's also a little bit interesting to me because I haven't played any of the Resident Evil game that establishes the characters that set up that've been in the modern Resident Evil games. So I like had no idea who Ada was other than someone who Deus Ex Machina is throughout 4 and 6.
Yeah.
So I am enjoying at least a little bit, like, seeing this person as a character.
Yeah.
Also, apparently, once you beat all the chapters, there's a additional cutscene that kind of wraps things up. So yep. I guess I'm at least going to wait to see that.
I would be really curious to see what you think of Resident Evil 2. It's like $6 on PSN.
Okay.
Yeah, and like that introduces a lot of the stuff you're going to see, like, you know, that you've seen in Resident Evil 6. I you know, just if you're able to get through the tank controls, which I would be able to, I would forgive you for not, you know, for being daunted by that. You know, like what you think of that in contrast to this?
Because we should start a Kickstarter for it.
Yeah, I'll just okay. So I. A funny joke would be to just increment the Patreon, just add a milestone goal that's just whatever we're at now plus $6. but I won't do that because that's goofy.
Yeah, we got to keep it professional.
Yeah, got to keep it pro. Keep pro.
As we do.
Played anything else, David?
Yeah, other than that, I'm choosing to tell this story my way. In a daring raid, stole Dennis's PlayStation Vita.
He came at me from all sides, which was strange because it was just him.
he's everywhere.
I was in a funhouse hall of mealers.
So I've been check out Metrico and Gravity Rush. I'm really, Metrico is interesting. Like it's very, very, I don't know. I'm not used to puzzle games, so it's kind of cool playing a genre I really don't play much. And the aesthetics of it are, I mean, are really, really, good. In fact, probably my one complaint, if I had one with it, is I almost wish they doubled down on like the graph look and stuff a little bit more. I'm a little bit, and part of this is just a little bit, it's less for me, I think, than it is for like Dennis Cole, you know, someone who's big puzzle person. But I'm not sure what I think of some of the more odd control inputs. In particular, I really dislike the back screen touchpad.
Oh, what is that?
I know.
That's, you use it to aim your shots, right?
Yeah.
Interesting. I've had a Vita for a while. Maybe I've gotten accustomed to it. Maybe I'm setting you up for failure in the future. That is one of the least offensive pieces of the Vita kind of random controls out there. But
yeah,
I remember having to adjust to it when I first got the Vita.
Yeah, I don't know if part of it is the way I hold the controller is with my hands over that.
Oh, huh.
So I don't know if that's part of it, is it keeps me from holding it the way I normally would, or the way I normally would messes up my aim or something. But I'm a little surprised. Did you maybe comment on this? It got kind of harsh reviews.
Extremely harsh reviews for having bad controls, essentially.
See, I don't know. Like, a lot of this, it strikes me as, this is a game I feel like no matter what it did, I almost couldn't give it like less than 3 out of 5, simply because it so much is just its own game.
It's very unique.
Yeah, yeah. And I feel like it's like, even like a lot of people I saw like knocked its aesthetics. It's like, even if you don't like the aesthetics, like, clearly that was the aesthetic they meant to have. Like, I don't know. That's kind of interesting to me, because I think the whole graph thing's actually really, really cool.
Yeah.
But does the whole, at the end of each level, you can either go left or right, does that ever, like, is that a thing at all?
Yes, but I'm not going to spoil it for you.
Okay, fair enough.
If you ever decide that you're just never going to finish it, then I'll tell you. But if there's still a chance that you're going to finish it, I don't want to give that away.
Okay, fair enough. I also have to say, the whole like the actual ending stage thing where you get to like the giant circle, that puts me on edge, because somehow they use the exact same sound effect for ending a stage that Lone Survivor uses for the zombies.
Nice.
So, and then other than that, I've been playing Gravity Rush, which is just completely epic. I don't know exactly what to say about it. It's just a lot of fun. I find it kind of funny that some of the backstory is like, you know, being confused about why do, you know, people arbitrarily hate me because I have these powers, when I fairly routinely, like, whenever you activate your gravity thing, anything nearby, gravity also switches for it. So I fairly routinely accidentally fling people like into the oblivion.
Yeah, yeah. I never really thought about it that way, but that is true. That would piss people off.
Yeah. I mean, so I really like the comic book they use for like cutscenes. Mm-hmm. They're really, I don't know, a lot of them are both pretty well done and very cute.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that, to bring back a deep cut, Gravity Rush now is like a cat and is anime as hell.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it definitely is. And I mean, granted, maybe that's part of it, is I like anime. I find it funny that like the opening to the game is straight up the opening to like every anime ever.
Oh, what's that?
Just like it's basically like have a vaguely J-pop musical number over all of the picturesque main characters like wandering around town being casual.
Huh. Yeah. So Gravity Rush was kind of a killer app. It was a one of the main launch titles for the PS Vita. Like, does it impress you, David? Like in its presentation, because people were just completely blown away by the way that it looked and played.
I mean, I would say like from a very objective standpoint, it's not like a. I don't know. It's not like a Skyrim or whatever the most recent like game that has amazing graphics. It's not something like that where it's just like, wow, this is an unbelievable accomplishment. But I feel like in terms of just going full bore on kind of the verticality thing that seems like it's becoming more and more a thing in games. They definitely take that and build the entire game around it and really make it work.
Yeah.
And again, like this is very much a game that's aesthetics works for me, but I feel like the storytelling overall works really well.
Right.
So yeah, I would say it's a game that I'm finding incredibly enjoyable and it's very much I wish more games would do kind of what it does with verticality.
Yeah.
And just from a technical side, like you can literally fall or fly or whatever you want to call it from one side of the city to the other, which is, and you'll spend a long time falling. So it's, it can take a couple minutes to get across the city without ever seeing a loading screen. And so to have that, especially as a launch title, I think we kind of take it for granted now, but as a launch title on a handheld system, to be able to do what felt like some GTA style shit was amazing.
The other thing I wonder, and I never have a good call on this, on like how hard this is to do, or maybe it's just one of those things where it's like, it's like any sufficiently skilled craftsman is indistinguishable from magic. But I feel like the level design, just the degree to which, everything, any area of the level can be played in, on any of its sides, and all of them work pretty well, if that makes sense. So, like, there's whole areas of the level that are of the game, of the city, that are designed to be played upside down.
Hmm. And the best part is that they make sense if you think about, okay, why is this here from a right side up perspective?
Right, exactly. So there'll be areas where it'll be, like, the bottom of the city, and it's where, like, all the sewer and stuff empties. But if you flip around and you're walking on the floor, the ceiling, or whatever, it then becomes like this really well thought out like platformer area.
Yeah. So I've been eyeing a PS Vita on Amazon here recently, which the last thing that I need in my life is more games or another thing to play games on. And that has been fueled by two things. One, people really talking up Danganronpa as kind of the successor to the 9 Hours, 9 Persons, 9 Doors, and Phoenix Wright as kind of just really interesting visual novel type games. And that is only available on the Vita. And then also kind of the recent discussions about good stuff available there. And I don't know. It's getting to be a more and more compelling case, I think.
I'm telling you can borrow mine. Like David's had it for weeks and I haven't missed it necessarily.
I know, but for some reason to me, borrowing something from somebody, seems like more of a hassle than paying outright to have it. I feel so weird.
And just steal it.
Yeah, I feel.
Just drink a lot of booze, then go to Dennis's house.
There's so much psychic overhead associated with having something of somebody else's in my care.
Okay.
So
I can respect that.
It is. So this is not me. Okay, so it is me rejecting your generosity. But it's also me just saying this is an area where I'm not afraid to say that my neuroses are getting the best of me.
All right. So maybe if you ever want to come and just sit in my house and play it, then let me know.
All right. Okay. There we go. That's all I needed.
I will say, kind of to that point, up through like the DS, probably handheld gaming was my preferred form of gaming. In particular, like the Game Boy Advance was really like the high point for me. I'd say the interesting thing with this is I feel like it's really made the jump to being effectively a handheld console.
Yeah.
Into like, I feel like Gravity Rush to the most part, could be a console game.
Mm-hmm. What's Tearaway? They're releasing for PlayStation 4, and I know that they're adding enhancements to it and everything. But that is another game which you can just wholesale rip off the Vita and put onto another console, and it would stand just fine.
Yeah.
Is Monster Hunter a Vita game?
It is. Yeah, I've got a Monster Hunter 3 or 4. On there, I tried it and just I don't get Monster Hunter, and yeah. I know people that love it, and I don't get it. So
yeah,
but it's available for download.
Yeah, like does this put you any closer to like wanting to buy a PS Vita, David?
Yes and no. It makes me very much more feel it's unfortunate that a PS Vita would be like incredibly irresponsible for me to buy right now. I'm for my next purchase. I currently don't have any systems that can play next generation games.
Right.
So basically, at some point in the relatively near future, I'm doing air quotes need to either get like a PlayStation 4 or a new desktop.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where, like, if I wasn't going to school, probably yes.
Yeah. Makes sense. cool. I'm gonna have us move on just because we are running late on time.
Yeah.
Dennis, I hate to put you off because I know you have stuff to talk about, but I have nothing. So I'm just going to say what I have.
Go.
All right. Yeah. So desert golfing, guys. I found a cactus.
Everyone talks about this damn cactus.
Yeah, it's great.
Or meet this cactus.
This cactus is a pretty cool dude. It's got like water in it and shit. A little flower on top, I think. I took a picture of it.
I'm imagining like my reaction to finding the chickens in Beyond Eyes.
Yeah. Well, the cactus had been built up so much for me. Yeah. So I'm continuing to go. I'm on like hole, I don't know, like 400 or something like that, which is small potatoes. Last week I had made the assertion that it was randomly generated. I guess it isn't, which either means that this guy is absolutely insane or incredibly dedicated.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
Yeah, I know, right? Apparently around hole 1000, there's an urn, and I've heard rumors that around hole 2500, the desert turns pink. So we'll get there eventually.
Or you start hallucinating, one of the two.
Yeah, I've not seen screenshots of this. I've just heard tell. But it is this is a wonderful game. You know, I don't espouse the notion of minimalism. I think that appropriatism is better, but this is so stripped down and so bare and like right down to exactly what I think a golf game needs to be. And it's almost so without pretension that it just is this thing that you can play that like it, I don't know. It is worth experiencing.
So by comparison, Super Stickman Golf is like incredibly deep and complicated.
Yes.
Hmm.
I mean, just by virtue of having different course designs and by virtue of having, you know, like a free to play system to it, or having different power ups and hats and things. Like, you know, it is actually like, you know, Super Stickman Golf might as well be Mario Party Golf, right? Whereas this is kind of its own little thing, you know. It's, you know, but both lesser and greater at the same time. Over my gushing about it last week, did you pick it up, Dennis?
I did not, just simply because it slipped my mind.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I saw a cactus.
Yay!
I had Chris in town this week, this weekend, because of big life events stuff. So I didn't get a lot of time to play games. So I'm going to dip back into the vault real quick and talk about 80 Days.
Okay.
I'm playing it on iPad, but I believe it's on iPhone as well. It is a choose your own adventure version of the Jules Verne story or novel Around the World in 80 Days, where you start out in London and you are playing as the servant to a rich rich old dude. I've never read the story, so I don't know if it's accurate to that. it's a wager: who can get around the world within 80 days? As you approach each city, it gives you little choices that you can make about how you supply up or how you explore the city. And it's presented as like a little novel kind of thing, where it does an interesting trick with the writing, where it's either like deciding to. Not deciding what you say, but what the novel says about the way somebody else responds to you.
Really?
Yeah. So it'll be like, you encountered this person on a ladder who is playing with something that you don't understand. You ask them what this is. They respond helpfully with annoyance, et cetera, et cetera. So it plays, it plays around, with like who you have agency over as the person who is exposing the story. And I'm interested and curious, you know, insofar as like what kind of mechanical ramifications the choices that I'm making will have on my ability to progress around the world. Because there have already been times where like, oh, it'd be super great if you had this thing on you, but you left that back in Marrakesh. Oh, well. So it might be a hint. Maybe next time don't fuck it up so bad, you stupid incompetent fuck. Yeah. But it's got a super cool let's say stark presentation to it. Very few graphics, mostly explained in text, but in very attractive looking text. Iconography is pretty great. I haven't gotten too terribly far in it. However, it seems like there is a lot of there are a lot of potential ways that it can branch. David, you would love it because it is steampunk, being Jules Verne, yes. Jules Verne kind of thing. That doesn't so much get in the way for me, or amplify it in any particular way. Yeah, 80 days.
So you made me think of something, describing the way that you kind of have agency over everything but the main character, or, you know, things other than the main character. There's a game called Pavilion, it's in development right now, I think, but that describes itself as a fourth person puzzler. And the whole idea is that you can kind of influence elements of the world around the character, but never directly influence the character himself.
So it's Pac-Man 2.
Yes. Yeah. Or Lemmings? I don't know.
Yeah.
Pac-Man 2, Pack Harder?
Yeah. we did an abject suffering about Pac-Man 2. But basically, the idea is you are a cruel and uncaring god who just basically subjects this incredibly emotionally unstable Pac-Man to several indignities and injustices to see how he reacts. Yeah.
Then okay. Yes.
And we also talk about the logistics of fingering Miss Pac-Man. So there's something for everybody.
Well, now I'm not going to be able to get that out of my head. Now I got to go listen to figure out how you do it.
Oh, we didn't figure it out either.
Damn it. One of life's great mysteries.
Yep. Oh. Yeah. This looks interesting, though. It kind of looks like Pavilion looks like Monument Valley to an extent.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. That's a very apt comparison.
Thank you.
Kind of isometric view, a little more fleshed out, less stylized, but yeah.
But that's me. I've been playing a lot of Half-Life, but we're going to talk about that on Watch Out for Fireballs. I like it more than Gary does. although it is far too long of a game. It is an interesting evolutionary step, and I believe that in current terms it's overrated. However, if you look at it in history, there is a lot really to recommend it. I'm at Zen now, so expect that opinion to drastically fall off. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Dennis, you've been champing at the bit, so I will defer to you.
Yeah, I keep saying I'm going to talk about it, so I'm going to talk about it. I streamed my arena run on Hearthstone. So just to cover it, last week I was bitching about the fact that you could pay more gold to get kind of a chance to build a deck out of random cards and then have a chance to do better. So it was like paying for a chance at a chance at a chance. Really what happened is I just don't know what the hell I'm talking about. So... You know, Hearthstone is, it kind of lends itself to, you know, knowledge is power there, where if you kind of know the cards that are out there, if you know the way that they work together, you can do a much better job of building a deck on the fly. And so when I did the Twitch stream, there were just several people who listened to the show who hopped on and were kind of my Sherpas for the whole thing. So right from the beginning, building the deck, I'd kind of pull up, you know, it pulls up three cards at a time and you can only pick one. And I'd say, hey, you know, so here's how I would normally think about it. And I would choose card two. And then I'd wait to see in the Twitch chat, whether or not I made the right decision. Twitch is, you know, interesting in that the feed, that people are watching is maybe about 5 to 10 seconds behind the, you know, what you're actually doing. And it would inevitably lead to, like, every single time I would say, okay, there's three cards. I know that card one, I'm not interested in. That's objectively a bad card. I would never do that one. So I'm trying to decide between the other two. And then midway through saying that, everyone would just chime in and be like, oh my God, card one is so awesome. Use that one. And then, so I know I'd done fucked up, but they hadn't heard me yet saying how bad I thought card one was. So it's just this constant cycle of me making a fool out of myself. But I did get a deck that I'm pretty happy with. Lost my first two games, but they were way more competitive than I've ever been before. Previously, I've only won if the person I'm playing against disconnects. So that's the extent of my winning, except on the third match of this playthrough, I was able to actually pull out a win. And it was the same kind of thing where I would say, okay, given the cards in my hand, here are the two that I would play. What do you guys think? And again, they're able to kind of see and react to it after I've already made my commentary on it. And so they'd inevitably see something that I didn't, or have a much more intelligent strategy that I'd, again, make a fool of myself and then learn and got to pull out that win. So the way the arena works is if you keep on winning, you keep on playing, and you keep on playing until you've lost three times. So, I can continue using this character. I'm sure I will at some point in the future, but I sure as hell am not going to use it without some backup. So I will be streaming any arena work that I do from here on out. But yeah, it was just, it's incredible how just a little knowledge goes a long way for that game. Just being aware of the potential cards that are out there. Half the cards I was seeing, I didn't even know existed before I saw them. So to have someone who was like, oh yeah, I've seen that, it combos well with card X, was invaluable. And I learned a ton.
So you were crowdsourcing your multiplayer matches.
Yeah, basically. Is that cheating? Does that count as cheating?
I don't know if it's cheating. It's just hilarious that is an option that is afforded to us.
No, it's totally that's a very apt way to describe what happened. Like, I would just kind of said, again, just for entertainment value, said what I would do and then saw what the right thing to do was. And I think maybe twice over the course of the whole ordeal of choosing the deck and playing the games, I chose correctly. And I'm hoping that percentage goes up over time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I mean, it was a ton of fun. Took all the pressure off of me, right? Because I have nothing to lose but my dignity, and that's been gone for a long time. So, so it was a ton of fun. Again, I think there were maybe five people watching, somewhere in that range, and that was like perfect, because then I got to see them kind of talk back and forth, and they were able to discuss amongst themselves. It was like We got some master strategists listening to this podcast. You know, so that was fun. I could see if it got up to like 20 people, even, you know, 10 people, it would start to get real crowded to try to hear everyone's opinion. At that point, I just need to set up an algorithm that sees, you know, checks what most people recommend and automatically does that. And you've got Twitch Plays Hearthstone or Hearthstone. So that's the plan going forward. That's my get rich quick scheme.
I've got to say, I'm really glad to hear they've added drafting to Hearthstone, because I feel like that really addresses kind of one of the problems of trading card games, which is that, you know, building your deck is probably, or at least debatably, the most fun part of the experience, but at the same time, for like any normal person, it's in your best interest to just look up what deck the tournament winners are using.
Yeah. And that's tough on two fronts. One, it takes a really fun portion of the game away, like you just described. And then two, you know, the people who are being competitive in tournaments have decks that would take you forever to build without spending money or require you to spend money, which I guess is the whole name of the game. But, you know, and then once you've seen those decks, it's like, oh, well, now I feel really crappy about what I'm playing with. So the arena is this great equalizer.
Sure. How much would it take to create a professional quality deck?
That's a good question. There's a crafting system where you can use, it's like magic dust or something to create a card. And, you know, a regular card costs 40 dust. And if you destroy a regular card that you don't want, you can get 5 dust. And it's that basic ratio. I think that's 8 to 1 ratio for what you get for what you have to pay for it. It starts out at 40 for the basic card. Once you get up to like the legendary cards, I think it's like 2000. So you're having, you know, that would take a long time to do without spending money, but you can buy, the dust, I think, to just buy the cards you want. Essentially. I haven't looked into how economical that is. I've gotten a fair amount of pretty high powered cards just from playing the game though. And that's again, why I think a deck building game lends itself so well to free to play.
Yeah. So something you said earlier kind of awakened something inside me, which is Twitch Plays Hearthstone.
Yeah.
The Twitch Plays Pokemon experiment was very effective because everybody was rallying around a common cause. But what I think is a stronger force, and history bears this out, is tribalism. Okay.
Yeah.
So, since Hearthstone is inherently a one-on-one game when you're, you know, not doing the next Ramos stuff, what happens if you make 2 Twitch Plays Hearthstones and then set them against each other? Okay? So, hear me out. Everybody yes. votes on the next campaign, but it's 2 accounts that are playing each other. All right. And you take something like, you just name one of them something arbitrary. You name both of them something arbitrary, like, something from Legends of the Hidden Temple. Cause like, right, the 90s are really in now, BuzzFeed mm-hmm. and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So like, it's the Blue Barracudas versus like the Silver Monkeys or whatever. And then that, you know, that gives people a color and an animal to rally around and see, you know, see what kind of like shit you can kick up with that.
By the way, Blue Barracudas would always have to play the River Crocolisk if it came up.
What it?
Sorry, that sounded like I was having another stroke. A river crocolis.
Oh, jeez. See, I've been trying to cut back on the "oh gosh, I had a stroke" comment because it might be insensitive. Are you just owning that now?
Yeah, I don't know what else I can do with it. Like, I got away from it scot-free, and I'm incredibly grateful, and I don't deserve that. And so I might as well smile about that. So
you're like Jeff Bridges and Fearless. Your plane went down, but nothing happened.
I know.
You got a new lease. You'll say whatever the fuck you want.
So yeah, the River Crocolisk is essentially the Blue Barracuda of Hearthstone.
Okay. So I just wanted to float that. I'm sure it's totally a thing. However, you know, slap some ad revenue on that and just be a pro.
Dot 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 profit.
Yeah. Continue, I'm sorry.
I don't know what else there is to say. I'm excited. I want to figure out a name for the priest, which is, it's sad because by the time this episode airs, the priest, that's the hero class I'm playing as for the arena battles. The priest will have been long dead. Unless I do amazing. I don't know. That's the fun of the arena. But I feel like he needs a name. So I want to put that out there. And if I ever play as a priest again, we will refer to him by the name chosen. But, I kind of reached a point when I talked about it last week where it's like, okay, I've gotten as far as I can building my own deck in the kind of base game. And I'd kind of written off arena, just assuming that it was not for me. And this has kind of given me a second lease on the game, which is good because, like I said, it's so good for the stage I'm at right now. So that's a lot of fun. I'll ask any other questions about that or?
No. I'm happy that you're enjoying it.
Green Laser 73, and that's GrenLaser 73 is my Twitch name. So if anyone wants to find me. If I'm playing Hearthstone, I'm probably streaming it. So yeah, that's cool. That. And then one quick note, I played Puppeteer, which is a platformer for PlayStation 3. It's got a really cute kind of whimsical aesthetic to it that I love. You're a puppet who's lost his head and gets caught up in this grand scheme to dethrone the Moonbear King. And it's you use a magical pair of scissors. To both fight and to get around. Huh. And it's adorable. The thing that gets me about it is that it's a game that I actually think would hugely benefit from being played in 3D. So the whole gimmick of the aesthetic is that it's set up like it's a live puppet show. So all the stages are kind of moved on and off as if they were sets being kind of restructured on a stage. And things will kind of fly out into the audience. There is a literal audience that will react to things in the game. And everything is kind of a puppet hanging off of a string. So it's a really cool idea, and it's a beautiful game. And because all of the sets that you're playing through are kind of one behind the other, and so you'll kind of run right to left, and then they'll move that set off the stage, bring the next one forward, and then you run right to left, and it all kind of changes. I think that depth would make it look amazing in 3D. So that might be the one game where that's truly the case, where it would be, you know, way better for 3D. And I think they designed it around that. And so, you know, kudos to them. I think that it's an example that we need of it. The sad thing, though, is that the game is garbage.
It doesn't do the thing that it is.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I love the aesthetic. And it's nigh unplayable. The primary means of locomotion is kind of using the scissors to cut across fabric, and you have to just mash the square button. And it's like too slow, even though you're mashing as fast as you can. Just everything about it feels clunky. The jump feels horrible, which it's not more Mario, so of course it does. And the penalty for death is super annoying. So, you know, if you get hurt, you lose one of your heads, which he just finds random things like pots or skulls or, tokens to use as his head since he's lost his head. And each of those has a different power, and you need the powers to solve puzzles in the game or to get to secret areas. Well, if you get hurt, it's like Sonic with his rings. He kind of loses one of his heads, but the window to get it back is way too small. Like it goes away unless you just immediately grab it. And that leads to this, even though it's slow and clunky and not very hard, getting hit once means you just lose your head almost automatically and can't get to any of the secret areas that you wanted to get to. So that's really annoying. So yeah, look at screenshots of it. Don't actually play it.
Watch somebody stream it.
It won't be me.
Twitch it.
Yeah. Huh. That is The Puppeteer, which is available on PS3. Sorry. Yeah. I always like to I try to like restate whatever it is we're talking about. Was this a PSN game?
It was, yeah.
Yeah.
And now I know why they were giving it away for free. Okay, it's so like the aesthetic is so good. Like this whole idea of the game, like playing a puppet show is really, really cool.
Yeah.
and it's beautiful. It just sucks.
Yeah.
So it's a wasted potential. Maybe Puppeteer 2 will be better.
Yeah. Well, I'm a big sucker for it, and I know you're a huge fan of like materials and games. Mm-hmm. You know, like, yeah, like that is for me a huge part of the charm of Little Big Planet, right?
So, oh, yeah.
You know, from looking at screenshots of this, it really seems like they're trying to, I don't know if like bite their steez is the right word, but it's like trying to ride that same, you know, that same feel, you know?
It is LBP-esque for yes. sure.
Yeah. Real quick, say this for the listeners. What is your, what is your Twitch ID?
Oh, my Twitch ID is GreenLaser73, GreenLaser73. Yeah.
You've talked about streaming so much, I just wanted to make sure that we repeated that and underlined it for anybody who is listening who wanted to watch you.
Yeah, come hang out.
Yeah. Was that all?
That's it.
Cool. Let's button it up. So, if you would like to help us out, there's the usual stuff. Leave us a rating and review on iTunes. It's been a very long time since that happened, and that does make a genuine difference, if not for our iTunes rankings, which helps people find us, but our egos, because we look at that. thinking in kind of more general terms, the Facebook group, which is facebook.com/thelevelpodcast, as we mentioned earlier, it is a place to interact with us. We're going to mention our Twitter accounts at the end of this. Let's look here. Then the Patreon, patreon.com/duckfeedtv. I don't want to stay here doing a bunch of admin all night, so let's wrap it up with that.
Hey, kick ass, take names, and give hugs.
Yeah.
That is a
good rule. So I've been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia at D Furia on Twitter.
I still am David Moneysmith at Moneysmith777 on Twitter.
I'm Ben Merkel at Merkelizer.
Yeah. I don't know from whence the drift to past tense comes from.
I don't know.
Yeah, so somewhere between Dennis and David, it turns into I have been and continue to be.
Because, I like it. But it steals my thunder every time because I want to jump in on that too.
Yeah.
So we've got the Holy Trinity, and so this is like the Holy Quartile.
Yeah.
It's is, was, will be, and has been.
Yeah.
Shale. You forgot shale.
Yeah. Hey Ben. It's been about a year since you have tooted. So, by October 19th, I'm going to need at least two fresh toots from you, okay?
Two toots. I don't know if I can double toot, dude.
Toot.
Yeah.
Hey, just get super drunk at the PRGE, and that can be one tweet, just whatever comes out. Yeah. But you have to tweet that night, okay?
Okay.
All right. Yeah,
Ben,
that's fair.
Promise me.
Yeah.
I'm not good about promises, but I will try.
Okay.
I don't want to break a promise.
Yeah. But until next time. Why don't you just assemble a jamber me?
Cole, you have a very good NPR voice, by the way.
I know.
I don't think I can top that by any means.
Thank you. You can try.
The people's voices on NPR creep me the hell out.
Well, what is that? Do you know why that is, David?
Why is that?
I've got to take the pop filter down here. They're right up on top of the microphone. Do you hear that?
Do you hear?
I'm actually right on. It sounds like I'm right in your ear.
Sounds like you're trying to make out with someone.
I can just kind of. Just right there for a second. Yeah. Aww. It's pretty gross, right?
I cringed when you did that. Yeah.
Yeah. He's got to get right up on the microphone and
hold on, Cole. Can I hear your Garrison Keillor?
Ooh.
I want to know your NPR range here.
I don't know. It's not that great.
Which one? Not in your roster? That's all right.
It's not my roster.
You got to say everything like you just got punched in the gut and. And then put long pauses where they don't really belong.
That's decent.
An Ira glass?
Which program is
this? Do you get an Ira glass?
This week we have a variety of stories. We pick a theme. We bring you a variety of stories in that theme. And we'll be back right after the break. It's good. I have to sound just a little bit nervous. I can't quite hit the timbre of it, but it's more about the cadence.
It's
actually really good.
Yeah.
God damn, we all listen to way too much NPR.
Yeah, I want to get down a good Robert Krulwich. But I've not been able to get it because he has his voice actually lives up in his nose a little bit, but not in a nasal kind of way.
But it's like a rumble to
it. It's like up in the nose with a lot of throat resonance.
Yeah.
There's a seasonedness to it that I can't quite nail.
Is Krulwich a throat warbler?
No. What are you, like a tube and throat singer?
Yeah, like that's what that's called, right? Where you get your nose and your mouth going at the same time with sounds.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, what is it? Genghis Blues.
I learned about that on NPR.
Yeah.
I really enjoy that. Cole talking about people's voices is indistinguishable from like someone talking about tasting notes for wine.
I don't know. I'm a student of voice, right? I don't know why I feel so inclined to be defensive about this.
No, it's awesome.
Yeah. Huh.